Jim doesn't really need an introduction. Everyone here has most likely been invited by him. But I'd say most of the scholars in the room would know Jim from when he started his doctoral work at Oxford with Alexis. Most of the students here would have been taught or are being taught by Jim at SOAS. And for those here simply out of their enthusiasm for yoga, I would know that Jim has become a leading light on the history of medieval yoga traditions. In fact, this workshop itself is a testament to his success in researching and teaching yoga, and I think that we can all thank him for this opportunity and the event itself, so particularly myself. So thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much, Jason. I have to see if you'd clap at the end as well. That's daunting. And thank you, Peter. Thanks very much for sort of doing all the putting the text in context, the Amrita Siddhi, which I'm going to be talking about as well. Otherwise, I'd have had to try and do it in a short time. Would have done a much worse and garbled job of it. So as Peter said, I'm going to look at the central practices, so the practices that are in this Amrita Siddhi Mula text as well, and which form the core of the text, at least the core technique. So we might say that they are the earliest, the fundamental practices of Hatha Yoga, and we do these three techniques called the Mahamudra, the Mahabandha, and Mahabedha. And they're then subsequently found in just about all Hatha Yoga texts, but in slightly different forms from how we find them in the Amrita Siddhi. Well, some of them. I'll go into that in more detail shortly. First of all, I'll explain to you the mass of handouts, the mass of information on the drive. The main thing to look at, for the Sanskritists, is the edition. So we've got a critical edition, working critical edition of Amrita Siddhi 10 to 14. I've also put in a very rough draft translation for those of you who'd like to follow that as well. And then there's another, I think there's an item called handout, and that just consists of passages from other texts which treat these same practices. And I'll just say a short word about them. As I said, they crop up in just about all subsequent Hatha Yoga texts, which from the Dattatreya Yoga Shastra onwards normally teach 9 or 10 mudras, and so these practices are three of those. The treatments, as I said, in later texts tend to be fairly different from what we find in the Amrita Siddhi, not so much for the Mahamudra, but definitely for the other two. The closest we have is the third item on the handout. It's a text called the Amaroga Prabodha, which I did late last night, rough edition. Having collated two manuscripts, South Indian manuscripts, transcribed by Dr. Gupta, and it's really very close to the Amrita Siddhi, and I'll talk a bit more about that. But another feature that is notable about all the subsequent treatments, even the Amaroga Prabodha, is that when they teach these three practices, they add the raising of Kundalini to their purpose, which we do not find in the Amrita Siddhi. No mention of Kundalini whatsoever. Now, what I want to do now, in fact, there's a massive handout, it's a massive information, but in fact there's only about 10 verses that I'm really interested in trying to make sense of. Or maybe I can even reduce that to 3 or 4 for the last practice and the Mahabandha to some extent. But what I want to do is to... Oh, sorry, there's one more item in your folder, which is the manuscript itself. So if anyone wants to have a look at that. I'm not going to look very close at this manuscript C, the Beijing manuscript. I'm not going to look very closely at that, apart from for these few specific verses that I'd like to discuss or present to everyone and hopefully get some feedback, because I'm not exactly sure of how to interpret them. There are printouts of the handout, I think. Maybe some other bits, yeah. Okay, so without further ado, I'm going to start reading through the edition. It's very much a working edition. But as I said, please, I mean, I'd love to spend all day on this, but I'm going to try not to get, you know, too hung up on minor things. But please do stop me if you spot any glaring errors or omissions or anything that needs commenting. But otherwise, there are certain passages which I'll then bring up on the screen as well. I've blown up the manuscript C for the verses I'd like to look at in detail. Now, I've reproduced also chapter 10 in the handouts, and I was thinking about it as Peter was talking. Peter's suggesting that this Amrita Siddhi Mula is the original, and this I think is actually borne out by the text to some extent, in that the verses leading up to the treatment of the three practices present a sort of metaphysical justification for them, which is then not found at all in the description of the practices. So the first 10 chapters of the text describe the constituents of the body. I won't go into that in detail, but the chapter 10 describes is about guna. Okay, we have prakriti in the body, we have guna, and these actually have to be destroyed. So I'm going to start, well, to, without me trying to explain it, we'll start at verse 8 of chapter 10, which is at the top of the second page of the critical edition handout. We have rajas tamo bhibhutam cha shariram sarvadastitam vinasham anayoho krutva sattvam utpadyate dhruvam. So the body is constantly established in a state of having been overcome, something like that, abhibhutam, by the rajas and tamas gunas. Vinasham anayoho krutva, having destroyed those two, sattva, the third guna, is sure to arise, or assuredly arises. Utpane sattvike bhave satyarto jayate nirnam satyarte cha sati jnanam nirmalam bhavati spurtam. When this sattvic condition arises or has arisen, then understanding of truth, satyartaha, arises in men or for men. And when that arises, then a pure, spotless knowledge exists clearly. Spurtam arises clearly, Sportam.
Excuse me, Jim, some people are having trouble finding the handout. What's the
file? It says AS1014 PDF.
They are on the drive.
It is, yeah, it should be on the drive. Maybe you need to update the folder. Don't think there's any more printouts, and I'm afraid I need mine.
Yes, it's
AS. AS.
Thank you.
Okay, so verse 10, rajas tamobhyam samyukte sharire dosha purite yotra bravitya ham jnani so jnani vatulaha smritaha. So he who says aham jnani, I know everything, I'm a jnani, I have jnana, I have knowledge, in a body that is joined with rajas and tamas and is full of faults, I suppose, dosha purite, that he is an agyani, he's ignorant, and he's considered to be batulaha, what, crazy or something. And now here we get actually the second reference. Peter mentioned in chapter 8 the reference to this Swadhisthana yoga. Here we get the second reference to it, and it's very clear what's going on here. Swadhisthanena yogena nakshiyete gunaun runam asti mudra visheshena guru mukabja sambhava. So by means of this deity yoga or self-empowered yoga, however we want to translate it, these two gunas, so rajas and tamas, nakshiyete, they do not disappear, they are not destroyed in men. Asti mudra visheshena, there's a mudra especially for that, I think, understood, which is produced from the lotus mouth of the guru. So that's the introduction to the practice that's coming. And so then we get the Maha Mudra taught, and then there are these two subsequent practices which seem to be part of Maha Mudra as a whole. I'm not sure why it says there's a mudra especially for that, and it doesn't mention the Bandha and the Veda, actually. Perhaps the whole thing might be subsumed under the term Maha Mudra, although that's not said later on, if I remember rightly. Okay, so now we'll start with the Maha Mudra. Now, this is this practice. It is, as I say, it's taught in lots of subsequent later texts, and in a form pretty close to what we find here, in fact. And it's also practiced by some schools of modern yoga as well, in a in a similar form to how we find it here. But I'll just I'll read the introduction, and then when we get onto the practice bit, the actual technique, I'll bring up the manuscript for that. So, Katyate sa maha mudra sarva tantreshu gopita yam samprapya manushyascha bhavanti surapujitaha. So the Mahamudra is being taught that which is kept concealed in all tantras, having obtained which men become worshipped by the gods. Janma koti sahasrena kritva sat karma vistaram enam prapya bhavam hodehi param gacchanti yoginaha. So having performed a whole host of good works, sat karma vistaram, throughout tens of millions and thousands of births, having obtained it, enam, yogis reach the other side of the ocean of existence. Okay, and now that, there's a picture here. This is so Krishnamacharya, the famous guru of modern yoga. He taught Mahamudra Asana, and that seems to be found pretty widely in amongst the teachings today as well of yoga. That's looking a bit blurred. Sorry about that. Not sure what happened there. That's probably going to be the same all the way through. So if you want to look closely at the manuscript, so this was done rather late last night, I should have checked the resolutions. If you want to zoom in on the manuscript, there's another file in the handout and it identifies each folio. It's identified which verses are there, so you should be able to find it. I've also included here, Curtis Schaefer transcribed the Tibetan. I'm not sure, I haven't discussed this with you recently, Peter, but we were wondering if perhaps he had access to a higher resolution scan of the manuscript and was able to see more. I don't know if you've had any further considerations of that. Anyway, I don't read Tibetan, but I put that up for anyone who does. Also, rather annoyingly, I did highlight things in the Sanskrit where I've amended, where we've changed the what we find in manuscript C, and that hasn't come up, but I'll keep an eye out for that. Anyway, in this chapter, these readings are pretty well established. There's not too many difficulties, so I'll read on from here. Yonim sampidya vamena padamulena yatnataha savyam prasaritam padam karabhyam dharaye dhridham. So having pressed the perineum, the yoni, with the heel of the left foot, yatnataha, carefully, zealously, one should hold with the hands, or the yogi should hold firmly with both hands, the extended right foot, sabhyam prasaritam padam. Then, asane katim arupya chibukam hridayupari navadvarani samyamya kukshim apurya vayuna. Now, asane katim arupya, I think, suggests to me that we have a slightly raised asana, a seat, and the Tibetan translation, Peter tells me, also confirms that asana here means the seat. I think that the idea then is perhaps it's a slightly raised seat or a bolster or something. Perhaps one puts one's buttocks, haunches onto that somehow. So having raised one's haunches onto a seat and put, understood, one's chibuka, one's chin on one's chest, hridayopari, navadvarani samyamya, having restrained or closed, I suppose, the nine doors, so the nine gateways, which we heard about earlier this week, one should practice or commence arabhit prana yantranam, restraint of the breath or of prana. Chandrarka yor gatim bhanktva kuryad vayu nivaranam. I missed a line, didn't I? Chittam chatupate kritva arabhit prana yantranam. What happened there? I just missed that. Kukshim apurya vayana. So one should, having filled the abdomen with breath. And then the next verse, 5. Chittam chatupate kritva arabhit prana yantranam. Chandrarka yor gatim bhanktva kuryad vayu nivaranam. So having placed the mind at the crossroads, now the chatuhupata or the chatushpata, we see it sometimes in the manuscript, I think, that is mentioned, I think I have a note in the, is it in Tantra Loka, various places it's mentioned. It's not actually explained, I don't think, exactly earlier in the Amrita Siddhi, but it's a crossroads, obviously it's a crossroads of four nadis are meeting somewhere in the head, seems to be the idea. So having placed the mind there, one should commence restraint of the breath, and then having stopped bhanktva, I've amended, what do we have? We had something here differently. Bhuktva. Having stopped the flow of the moon and the sun, i.e. the Ida and Pingala channels on the left and right of the central channel, one should, Kuryad, or the yogi should, practice Vayu Nivaranam, so again, restraint of the breath. I think, and you know, having these, when we were looking at the Skanda Purana and also the Brahma Yamala and so forth, some of the Jayadratha Yamala yesterday and so forth, these practices seem very difficult and obscure. Now, it seems to me actually with this text is a pretty, it's quite well thought through. It's hard to say I can make sense of it, but there does seem to be a fairly clear system. I suppose without actually being able to do it, one would never make complete sense of it, and I have to confess I haven't been able to do that. In fact, I don't know exactly what it says, as we'll come on to, so it would be impossible to practice perfectly. But yes, I think we're dealing with a sort of a more hands-on yogic text than some of the other texts that we've been looking at, where the author or redactor seems to have a reasonably good idea of what's going on. And another interesting point, actually, with this text is that we do have this well thought through yogic physiology and metaphysics behind it, which then in the subsequent Hatha Yoga texts we don't find. It sort of falls away, it all gets much more terse, and it seems as though, in fact, the authors of the later Hatha Yoga texts don't seem to have such a good understanding of what goes on in the yogic body as we find here. In contrast to other aspects of Hatha Yoga, perhaps, which expand and get more explained, here something seems to get forgotten. Okay, now we get a description of the various results. Here it seems to be some sort of alchemical notion. Jaraneyam kashayasya charanam bindu nadayohu charanam sarvanardinam analasya cha deepanam. I think just with this, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but jarana, so this is the destruction, I suppose, of kashayas, which I think is a fairly heavily Buddhist term, isn't it, rather than Shaiva or anything else, wouldn't we say here? Would that be right to say? And the stimulation, the making bindu and nada move, and the chalana, the making all the vessels, the tubes in the body flow, and the kindling of the fire, i.e. the digestive fire, I think. How am I doing time-wise? I've got 20 minutes. Is that 11:06? What time am I meant to end? 11?
You've got another 40 minutes.
Okay, great. Now I'm doing okay now. Okay, so, and then I'll carry on reading this. And kayavak chitta yogena kayavak chitta sadhanam bhavet abhyasato vashyam margarudhasya yoginaha. So again, here these guhya samaja terms that Peter was drawing attention to earlier. So by means of yoga of the body, voice and mind, arises perfection or mastery of the body, voice and mind. It's sure to arise through practice for the yogi who is on the path, Margarudha. And Jason, you were sort of wondering, we were wondering if perhaps this core bit of the text might not be Buddhist, but I think, and after you suggested that to me recently and I've been reading through it again, I think we can be pretty sure again that it has come out of a similar milieu, at least, because it's full of these Buddhist terms such as kayavak, chitta yoga, and so forth. Anaya mudraya sarvam jayate yogino dhruvam tasmad enam prayatnena mahamudram samabhyasit. So by means of this mudra, everything is sure to arise for the yogi, so he should practice the mahamudra carefully, prayatnena. Sarvasam eva mudranam mehatiyam swayambhuva Mahamudram chate nainam vadanti vibudho tamaha. Of absolutely all mudras, this is the greatest, mehati iyam. Then we have this swayambhuva, which when I read it, I just think, oh, self-born, spontaneously arise. But Peter, it's been great reading this with Peter. I wouldn't have been able to make sense of half of it without him. And he suggested, although I don't think you were 100% convinced, but this might be In fact, we might want a genitive plural here of Swayambhuvam, referring to Buddhas as a term for the Buddhas, and this is the best mudra. I think you did say that. Does that not make sense, then? A genitive plural, meaning Buddhas. No? You think just self-born? I don't know why it would be Swayambhuva. I mean, and then in the next line we have the Vibhudhotamaha, which I think the Tibetan translation, you said, translates as Buddhas, the best Buddhas. They say that because of that, the Buddhas call this the Mahamudra, the Great Seal. Can you see another way of taking Swayambhuva?
I don't see that the meaning Buddhas can come out of Vibhudhotamaha.
Right. Yeah, never in a tantric Buddhist text,
well,
it would never.
No, I think I wasn't saying that, but.
But the Tibetan translation says that.
Right.
Okay, so that's just a.
The Tibetan's got it wrong.
So that's a misunderstanding there. Okay.
Might it be that there are equal portions coming from Shaivism and Buddhism? I mean, I don't know, Bindu and Nada, for example, is
yes.
That very Buddhist thing? It's very Shaivist thing.
I have to ask the Buddhist experts whether it's even found. I've read very little tantric Buddhism. Bindu Nada, you find?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately imported from Shaivism, but I think by this time it's
Kaya Chitta
Vakka.
It's also already found in
Pashupata
Sutta.
Yes.
Bhasha, I think it's not
on
the
news.
Okay.
I think
it's
pervasive.
Yeah.
So it's not a distinguishing feature then, no.
Structuring pattern for other esoteric elements that are distinguishing for this stuff. So that's the idea of body, speech, and mind. I'm not sure we all recognize that trend.
Okay, so verse 10, anaya badhyate mrityur hite yam tena sarvada cetasa vidruta yena yantram tenaiva nirjitam. So this mudra understood, badhyate defeats, binds, stops death, and so it is always good. I think that's what's intended here. Hita yam tena sarvada cetasa. Vidruta yena. So he who, by whom yena, the mudra understood vidruta, is held in the mind, which suggests the sort of mahamudra as a mental state rather than the practice here. He has conquered the yantra. Now I couldn't actually, and I don't think we managed to make much sense of what yantra might mean here. I don't think there's any variance either. I think we did find some mentions in Pashupata Sutra, but there it seemed to be a good thing, so that you didn't want to conquer. It was a restraint and a limit. But other than that.
So one who has mastered this with his mind has mastered the yantra.
Mm. Or maybe it means just the actual technique, perhaps, that viewing it as some sort of mechanical, physical process. Yeah.
By the way, if I can go back to Swayambhuva, I can't help it. I have two ideas. One is perhaps too complicated in the sense that it makes it less plausible, but that what we have here is a putting together of two verses, which don't, two lines don't really go together. What the verse original wanted to say, Swayambhuva Paroptam, or something, this has been taught by the self-created, by the Shiva, or something, the being, perhaps Brahma. Or alternatively, it's bad Sanskrit for, this is the self-arisen, eternal, natural mudra, which all others are transformations.
Right.
This is the innate one, the self-created, possible. It is a dodgy Sanskrit for Swayambhuta.
That's fine.
But yantra remains possible.
Yeah.
It's not a mantra.
We seem to get Akshar in the next line.
Well, yeah, well, that I'm going to bring, we're going to look at this. So this is a, well, okay, we'll move on. Well, I'm not sure. We'll crack that one. Let's have a look at the
in
next one.
Of course, in early Shaivism, this is not what it becomes later in the Shaivta definition of diagram. It's, among other things, a magical procedure for bringing about a result. More generally speaking, I think of them as Shaiva. In the. Yeah, there you are. So close I can't see you, like my own self. Yeah. In Ramayana, yantra is used in this rather special sense. Nothing to do with diagrams, but simply any kind. Supernatural end. That too, could that be intended here? This is the incidental benefit. If you master this, then you've mastered all the supernatural techniques incidentally.
Perhaps. I mean, we don't find it elsewhere in the text, so we have no support of that.
And it's perhaps a bit late for this early usage.
Okay, so.
You find, and I think in the sense that it's the practice.
Ah, the restraint of the breath.
Yeah, the strange meaning of the whole practice of this, that it's being described.
Yeah, it could be, yes.
I mean, you suggested that, and I think it's...
Does one master a restraint?
And couldn't it be a body? Because in Bengali tantric texts, yantra is normally
the body.
Body. And since the text is very Eastern Indian, I think it...
Ken Go said the same, yeah. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Right, I'm gonna keep moving there, because I don't want to the most confusing bit for me is near the end, so I don't want to get there. But this is interesting and perhaps a joke of some sort, not sure. Haven't actually got it yet, but we've got Asyashcha Pratitam Nama, Padanam Pratamaksharai. Uktam cha yoga yuktanam pramodaya cha kevalam. Okay, now the uktam is probably, I mean, it's from the later Jodhpur manuscripts. The I think the Mysore manuscript, which Dr. Gupta transcribed, has yuktam, but C, I don't know if you can see here, sorry about the low resolution, but C doesn't have that, it misses out the first two syllables, so I'll just put that in there. But something's going on. It's something about it's so of it, i.e., the mudra, the name or a name, nama, has been taught or pratitam made known, spread by the pratamaksharahi, the first syllables of the words, perhaps. Sorry.
Of the what?
Of the words of the.
Padana.
Oh yes.
Padana.
What have we got? Have we got?
Feet.
Well, we have padana in the Tibetan.
Ah, okay.
And I said that he has a context of problems.
I see.
Mm. Yes, of course. Yeah. And then it says, well, we're not sure about the uktam cha, but it's kevalam only for the pramoda, the amusement of those who are engaged in yoga. Is this some sort of riddle or a... The best we got when we were reading it before was mammu. And it's a kind of joke name for the practice from Mahamudra. That's the first. But then you'd want a dual anyway. You'd want Akshara Abhyam, I think. But perhaps we have a plural for a dual.
Pada Yor rather than
yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there, any other?
I have no idea, but it looks like, yeah,
Okay, well, I'm going to keep moving
maybe
on.
Maybe it should mean something like when the first letters of the words of the name, Nama Padama, are said, it causes delight to yogis. Just hearing the name already causes delight.
Huh.
It's
better.
So when you say ma, all the yogis in the room get
excited.
Okay.
It's plural. It's plural. So maha.
Yeah, the yogis say ma. That's what they're doing.
We're not on track here, I think.
So it's causing delight already?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I could keep the momentum up. Mahabandha. Now, so we've got So this practice, the Mahamudra, was done with one leg extended. Yeah, there's the differences within the later descriptions of the practice are, apart from the Amaroga Prabodha, they say that you should change legs. But this text and the Amaroga Prabodha, it's pretty clear you have your left leg pressed against the perineum, your right leg extended, and you don't change it. And it's also pretty clear, as we go on to into the Mahabandha, that that's how you remain. Whereas in most, pretty much all, apart from the Amaroga Prabodha, of subsequent Hatha Yoga texts, you do what's then taught in the Dattatreya Yoga Shastra. So you place the prasaritastu yaha pada, so the foot that's extended, tam urupari vinyaset, you put it on top of the other opposite thigh, and this is the ayameva mahabandha, this is the great bandha, one should practice it mudrava, like the mahamudra. But that seems to be, that's not what's going on here, it's pretty clear. And that seems to be how it's generally practiced in modern yoga traditions, although often it's more off. I mean, I defer to other people's knowledge on this, but often it seems to look more like a siddhasana or a vajrasana or swastikasana, as it's called in various texts, as Dominic's written about. But anyway, it always involves locks, these various locks, chin locks, or the Uddiyana Bandha, raising the abdomen and so forth. Now I'm aware it might be best actually just to jump straight to the lock. It involves, I'll just read verse 2. Bandhascha dvividho gyeyo yatha bindur udakritaha yoni bandho hi devi nam kanta bandho hi devataha. So here actually we do seem to have it, the text does seem to pick up on the yogic physiology that it teaches earlier, because it's saying that the lock is of two kinds, should be known to be of two kinds, in the same way that bindu is of two kinds. So the bindu, the substance in the body, is said to be both male and female. Here we have the yoni bandhu, the yoni bandha, the perineum lock for the goddesses, the devis. And in the earlier in the text, it says that at the bottom of the central channel there are lots of devis, and then at the top there is just nata. And so then the kanta bandha, the throat lock, would be for the nata, for Shiva or whoever it is at the top, the nata, the great god. Okay, purakam kumbakam krutva drutva mudram bhayapaham bandham samyojayet kshipram surasura sugopitam. So after inhaling and holding the breath and adopting the mudra, the maha mudra that's been taught, which gets rid of danger, bhayapaham, gets rid of fear, one should apply the lock quickly, the lock which is kept secret by the suras, the gods and the asuras. And now we get the actual technique, which I think I've put here. Gudam yoni samayuktam akuncha cheka kalataha apanam urdhugam krutva samanena cha yojayet. So the yogi should clench akuncha, the guda, so the anus, together with the perineum, yoni samayuktam cheka kalataha, at the same time, all at the same time. And having made the apana breath go upwards, he should join it with the samana breath. Bandham samarabhet yogi madhyamadwara parshvataha samrodhya tripatam yatnat kuryad vayoho sushrunkhalam. He should commence, has he already applied the bandha, hasn't he? But he should practice the bandha on both sides, both ends. I haven't thought this one through. Madhyama dwara parashvataha, so at the side or sides of the opening of the central channel. So the madhyama is a very important constituent of the body in this text. There's a chapter devoted to it, so it's the sort of the goddess of the central channel. And having restrained or closed the tripata, the triple pathway, carefully, yatnat, he should kuryad vayaho sushrunkalam, put a good sort of, really lock it tight, chain up the breath. Now this next...
You could say threefold path at the sides of the door of the central channel.
Yeah.
Could you say that more loudly?
The Tripata could be at the Madhyamadwara Parshvataha, at the sides of the... possibly. Now this next... sorry, I didn't bring that one up. The next verse is obscure to me, slightly. Prane charopya vayam cha krutva pranam adho mukham.
But sorry, is the previous verse also obscure? Because... I didn't quite understand it, so...
Oh, right.
Whether you understood it or whether...
Well, I think I understand the Sanskrit, but what exactly it's explaining is to be done, I'm not 100% sure. The lock should be applied at the side of the opening of the central channel. So presumably, I think we've got... when it says that there's two locks, there's one for the goddesses, that'll be at the bottom end, and then there's one for... the god, which will be at the top end, but I suppose that's not the sides, is it? That's the ends. So why it should be at the... perhaps...
But maybe he means in this unusual, the unidiomatic sense of end.
And yeah, that would perhaps make better sense, yeah.
And then the Tripata is not three parts, it's like the junction of three parts, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
So three parts meet.
Yes.
And where is...
like the Chaturshpata. I think it's in the head somewhere.
Yeah, in the head already.
Yeah, because as it goes on to explain now, this process blocks off three pathways, leaving one open through which the piercing and the Veda and so forth will happen. I think that's what happened.
In the Kunavritti, the Tripatasthana is above the eyebrows, but there are other Tripatasthanas.
And there are other Chaturshpatas as well, if that's what's so confusing.
Yeah, sometimes the Chaturshpata is here also. In the Mahanaya Prakasha, I think, or Shukhita, it's here.
Yeah.
Very, very clearly explained.
Yeah, the Brahmaja is the Chaturshpata.
But there's also one inside above the uvula, I think.
in this text, there are four parts and nevertheless a Madhyama. Three.
There are three, but then it does say that the moon is said to go both by the left path, by Ida, and then also in the middle of the Madhyama. So I'm wondering if that perhaps is the fourth path. But it's not made clear. I think I might just move on. This chapter is rather long, isn't it? The idea, if we look at verse 8 anyway, the idea is that through this lock, the channels are made viparita, so they're reversed, which is an idea we get also in subsequent Hatha Yoga texts. Obviously, there's this viparita karani, the idea of the headstand or inversion, which inverts all the channels. This process is meant to reverse the flow through the channels. They normally flow downwards. There's quite a nice simile in 9-10. So, adho vahena tattvani shariraad bahyagani cha sarani prapalayante swakshetra srotaso yatha yatha bahya gataha setuhu pravahasya nirodhakaha tata shariragashchayam yatavyo yogi bhi sada. So the essences, the tattvani, I'm not sure if tattvani and sarani are sort of in apposition here, but the essential elements perhaps that go downwards and leave the body, and flee from the body, prapalayante, I think this is like streams from their fields perhaps, so when one's irrigating a field, I think is the idea. They, in the same way, yata bahya gataha setuhu, in the same way that in the outer world, a dike, I think is probably the best word for setu here, blocks a stream or blocks a flow of water, so is this lock understood in the body, so should this lock in the body be understood by yogis to function, I think, because we need to supply. Sada, all the time. Now, and if we go to verse 12, Soyam chatuhu pate bandho marga traya nirodhakaha ekam vikashayen margam yena siddhaha sukham gataha. So the lock, this is the lock at the crossroads, the meeting of the four channels or tubes understood, and it blocks the three of them basically. It blocks the Marga Traya, and one Marga, a single channel, Vikasha, it opens up, and that's the channel by which the Siddhas have attained happiness, reached happiness. Okay, I'm going to move on into the Vedha. Now, again, there seems to be quite general consensus through later Hatha yogic texts of how this practice is done, but it's clearly not what's going on in this text. So we have Mahabandha Stito. So if you remember in the Dattatreya Yoga Shastra, the extended leg was brought in, put on top of the opposite thigh. The left heel is still at the perineum. And then the idea is Mahabandha Stita. So in that position, Bhumau Svichau Santadaye Chanai, Shanahi, gently tap the buttocks on the ground. This is the great piercing, which is practiced by perfected men or something. Narahai looks a bit suspect there. But this really doesn't seem to be practiced much in modern yoga traditions, as far as I can tell. Yes, that's right. Yeah, we saw in that exhibition, in the recent exhibition of the Dalai Lama's secret temple, they get up to this a fair amount. There is actually, I've got a... Yes, actually, I'm going to jump this, I think.
They do it, it's in
lotus. Oh, do you want to see it? Well, it's not really it, you see, and it's, let's put, this is Krishnamacharya. How do I make it work? Maybe it won't work. Is there a...
space bar, sorry.
I tried that, but it just makes it move on. So I know how to do it on a Mac, but not on...
Go back before it, and then you come... If you go to the previous slide for this one, you'll move forward again. Maybe right-click.
Oh, here we go. So I'm not sure that he taught it as such. I think someone later on has, this Mark explained to me, and with a twist is obviously not in the text either. I think it's a later...
He doesn't teach it in any of his works, and as far as I know, none of his students teach it either.
And I had a sort of good search on the internet. I couldn't find. I found one rather sketchy film of someone trying to do it, probably from a Hatha Yoga text.
And when it is taught in modern yoga, it's usually done in lotus, whereas
yes.
In medieval texts, it's a different.
I think the idea is as you drop yourself down, the heel bangs on the perineum, gives it a bit of a tap, which is meant to do the Veda, make things go upwards. But we have something different going on here, so I. Again, we see that verse that Peter looked at. So we're in chapter 13, aren't we? 13:3, about how the Mahamudra and the Mahabandha are like a lady without a man, if they're without the Mahaveda, or just the Veda here. Now, let's try to see if we can make sense of what goes on here. So from verse 5, this describes the actual technique. Now, this is where I begin to get have more confused about what is actually going on. I was already slightly confused, but now more confused. Pranam mahabalam krutva madhyama dwara sammukham vedhayet krama yogena chatushpatam javayuna. So having empowered or something, prana mahabalam krutta, having made the prana very strong and facing the opening of the central channel by means of the breath, presumably the same as the prana, the vayu, the yogi should pierce the chatushpata in stages, krama yogena. Now here's the sort of physical practice that I don't understand. Verse 6, Karabhyam lingam aropya prativyam druvasam nibham tatahi nishchalam krutva padadvayam adhomukam. I'd actually ran this past Professor Sanderson a while ago. I got carried away trying to understand what was going on here. I think people may be able to understand if they see the Sanskrit. But it means, so with both hands make, place the linga, but it could be understood as raise the linga. On the ground, Dhruva Samnibham. So would that be like as motionless as the pole star, or like a because Dhruva can mean a post as well, can't it? But that'd be unlikely here. You think just completely motionless. And this is also slightly odd because we haven't been told that the yogi has to be naked or anything at this point, which would be quite unusual. Perhaps not. I don't know about within Tantric Buddhist traditions. Would that be?
I just expressed skepticism about your possible interpretation of raising the yoga on the ground. I didn't come up with any solution for that.
Well, I think you pointed out that our rope more likely means put something on something rather than make it stand up.
Stand up, yes.
Yeah. And then tatahi nischalam kritva padadvayam adhomukam, and so then making the 2 feet face downwards and be unmoving, and then avakrapada mulabhyam katim uttapya sustiraha asphalayin niratankam subandho bhava karmana. Now actually before in the a little bit earlier than here we stopped having the there's a big lacuna in the South Indian manuscripts, unfortunately, because they're very helpful. And that, so 7 CD, the Asphalaya Niratankam, only found in C, in fact. And I just reintroduced it into the edition, but I'm still not sure what's going on here. We have, so, Avakrapada Mulabhyam, so by means of the heels of the 2 feet, which are avakra, which are straight, Katim Uttapya, so having raised up the haunches, Sustiraha. Do you think hands on the ground? Did we have that? Karabhyam.
No, that would be in 6 CD.
Then Asphalaya Niratankam, then he should flap or something, Asphalana. Now I think my hunch for Asphalana, which crops up here, and also we get Andolana. The chapter 14 is called the Abhyasa Viveka, and that gives a sort of summary of how all three practices are to be done together. And there it introduces this term Andolana, which we also find in the Amaraga Prabodha, which uses various verses. It gives a sort of precis of the whole thing. And there, rather than use what's taught here, it uses one or two of these, but then it mentions this andolana as well. So the body is meant to be shaken somehow or rocked.
Rocked.
Yeah. I'm not sure what bhava karmana is here. Okay. No idea. We have no other information on that. Well, I'm wondering about the posture. I did find something. I'm wondering if it's something like that, but with the heels underneath the perineum. And then you flap the, and I did actually found Krishnamacharya in a similar position, but not with the feet upright.